This is Radio EcoShock.
The massive fires that are blazing across central and eastern Texas.
The weather has haywire over much of the nation tonight. New York and New Jersey were hit with a tremendous amount of rain, up to 3 inches in 1 hour.
Record storms, record droughts. Radio EcoShock listeners know the climate is out of control. We see the energy system and the financial system going into a long, bumpy road that could lead to collapse. But maybe you don't know we're running out of a key fertilizer feeding the population bubble. And are you a member of a common security club? Or can money survive the end of growth? I'm Alex Smith, and we're about to explore all that with someone who knows. Richard Heinberg was among the first to explain peak oil to a world audience in books like The Party's Over and Power Down. Now the senior fellow at the Post-Carbon Institute, Heinberg pops up everywhere in documentaries and mass media. He's just done a whopping number of interviews about his new book, The End of Growth, Adapting to Our New Economic Reality. Trying to pick up what others miss, Richard Heinberg, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
It's very good to be with you, Alex. Thanks.
Richard, the last time we talked, it was about the almost inevitable blackout of fossil civilization when coal becomes too hard to find or too expensive to mine. I think you found another serious and surprising threat in your new book, namely the bottleneck of phosphates. What are phosphates and why should we care?
Well, phosphate is important to agriculture as nitrogen, and when farmers apply fertilizer to their field, usually they're applying a mixture of nitrogen, phosphate, and some other nutrients. But phosphate is, unlike nitrogen, it can't be introduced by, let's say, planting legume crops or doing crop rotation. It's mined as rock, and U.S. reached peak phosphate 20 years ago. So we're importing a great deal of the stuff. Most of the phosphate rock being used internationally these days comes from Morocco. And we're likely to see world peak phosphate within the next 10 or 20 years. And we really have no plan B in terms of global civilization.
Did you happen to look into the results of phosphate mining? Because it leaves a lot of uranium waste. That's another problem with it. I wouldn't expect everybody to know about that. I just happened to research it in the 90s, and there's tons of it in Florida. Just for your information, it's called phosphogypsum, and there's more radioactive waste from phosphate mining piling up in Canada and now in Africa. It's just one of those problems that nobody talks about, and it's part of this whole picture of fertilizers.
Right. As we move away from natural cycles, we end up with all of these environmental problems.
Let's get back to the bigger issue, and this is in your book, The End of Growth. What happens if we can't get enough phosphate or we just can't afford to buy it?
In that case, we end up with peak food, which, of course, is going to be even more serious than peak energy because we can do with considerably less energy, particularly we in the already industrialized countries. But having less food is going to be much more problematic given the fact that we have a growing population. It's true that there's a lot of food waste in the system, and we could make our distribution of food much fairer and more efficient. However, the reality is that we're already seeing food supplies stretch to the limit around the planet, and food prices are already a serious problem in poor countries. That's one of the factors that led to the uprisings in North Africa and in Middle East earlier this year. So the reality of peak food, I think, is getting less and less theoretical all the time and much more of a worrisome prospect.
True. It looks like we could hit peak agriculture soon if we haven't already. Well, in your book, The End of Growth, the subtitle is Adapting to Our New Economic Reality. So using that peak phosphate example, what can we do to recycle this key fertilizer?
Well, the word recycle is key here because we can't replace phosphate. What we have to do is recycle it through animal and human wastes and also use agricultural practices that make phosphates that are already in the soil more available to plants. That means promoting forms of agriculture that don't kill the soil, that actually promote microbial life within the soil, because that that microbial life actually makes the nutrients in the soil available to plants. As we rely more and more on adding chemical fertilizers to the land, what that essentially does is break down the microbial life, and our plants become sort of like junkies. You know, they rely on this human-supplied fix rather than being able to access the minerals and nutrients from the soil.
And I read in the journal Bioscience, there's an article there called Peak Phosphorus, and it said that some cities in Sweden are already requiring toilets to divert the urine to reclaim waste phosphorus. Man, America seems a long way away from that conversation.
Yes, well, we may go back to the days of the venerable outhouse in the future. Only they may be more sort of high-tech outhouses that are capable of recycling waste.
Let's move on to something else that you've covered in your book. I'd like to cherry pick another good example of adapting to an economy that has already overdosed on growth. Richard, talk to us about common security clubs as a solution.
Right. This is an idea that sprang out of a think tank in the Eastern United States Institute for Policy Studies. They've since been renamed as resilience circles. So if you want to find out about common security clubs, you might Google either that term or resilience circles. Basically, it's just a way of encouraging folks to get together with their neighbors and talk about their common economic problems as our global economy goes into contraction. Especially us Americans, we have this tendency to personalize our economic problems, to think that, you know, if we're out of work or if there are massive layoffs, something like that, it's all our fault, it's all our problem, and it's up to us to deal with it individually. The reality is that the economy is fundamentally flawed, and a lot of people are going to be hurt by this. And if we're going to respond, we're going to have to do it as communities, as neighborhoods. And so common security clubs or resilience circles are a way of getting people thinking about economic issues in a bigger way and talking about them with their neighbors.
Richard, we've seen extended families almost demolished in North American corporate culture because jobs cause people to move around so much. There were statistics that people were moving every 3 years to a different city, a lot of people. And if you don't want to join the local church, it can be hard to find mutual support these days. Can we rebond without those older institutions?
Well, I think we can. Another way that this is happening is through transition towns, which bring together things that are usually already happening in communities, local food systems, rideshare networks, car share networks, and so on, and get people talking to one another again and also sharing stuff. Tool libraries are a terrific idea for helping people, you know, gain access to, say, gardening tools and repair tools that they don't necessarily need to own themselves. It knits communities together and gets people sharing. And sharing is going to be a really key element in our adaptation to this new economic reality. Over the past few decades, we've been encouraged to buy more and more stuff. So every family has its own washer and dryer, its own lawnmower, its own you name it. This was beneficial to a growing consumer-based economy. But in a contracting economy, in a world of peak resources, we're just not going to be able to do that anymore. We're going to have to share a lot more.
You are listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with author Richard Heinberg. We're talking about his new book, The End of Growth. Richard, this book made me question some basic assumptions, and here is one. The whole banking system is based on the idea that money can multiply endlessly. We have compound interest, and capital is supposed to grow. My question for you, can money survive the end of growth?
I don't think our current money can survive the end of growth because we have a debt-based money system. Every U.S. or Canadian dollar in circulation right now represents that amount of debt somewhere in the system. How we got to that point is sort of a interesting story that I tell in the book. I won't go into that now, but we really have to get away from debt-based money because those debts imply the requirement to pay interest at some point. As long as the economy is growing, then more loans are being taken out, more money is being created, and therefore interest can be paid off and everything goes along just fine. But if the economy stops growing as it's doing now, then suddenly a lot of interest payments can't be met and we see massive defaults. And again, that is what we're starting to see. That's why we're seeing the banking problems in Europe. And I think we'll see the banking problems reemerge here in North America. So we have to get away from debt-based currency, and there are plenty of models around for how that can be done with mutual credit clearing systems, local currencies, and so on.
And I've got to be honest with you, Richard, when anyone starts talking about economists, my mind kind of turns off. Millions of people have lost faith in these experts now that their plans and predictions are falling apart. Who is going to replace the academics and the politicians who are still, right now, praying hard in that church of endless growth and telling us that's the answer? Who's coming up to replace them?
Well, you know, there's been a school of ecological economics for, 20 or 30 years, and these folks have not gained much traction in the world of conventional economics, but they have made some very significant points that I don't think can be refuted. They point out that conventional economics has some fundamental flaws embedded at its very core. The idea, for example, that the environment is a subset of the economy. It's just a set of resources that we extract and turn into useful products to sell. The reality, of course, is that the entire human economy is just a subset of the environment. If we have no environment, we have no economy. Herman Daly has been talking about these issues for many years, and there are a number of other important ecological economists around the world who are bringing issues to the fore about peak resources, the need to transfer to a non-debt-based currency, and so on. So they're being proven right with every passing day that conventional economics has it wrong. And the principles of ecological economics are all laid out pretty clearly in textbooks and popular books, so it just needs to become the mainstream.
Richard, through your books, the Post-Carbon Institute, your many speeches, you must be one of the most plugged-in people on the planet. I'm wondering, how do you survive that intense throughput, all the information all the time? How do you handle it personally?
Oh, well, I spend a lot of time in our backyard garden with our fruit trees and garden beds and chickens, and I also spend a lot of time making music. I play the violin, mostly chamber music, classical music, and play with friends. And I think that's the kind of pastime that is going to get us through to the next era, depending less and less on electronic mass entertainment, which just sort of jangles our nerves and leaves us as consumers of images and sounds, and gets us back to being, you know, producers of music and art, and participants in the intellectual life of our community.
I really like that answer. Surely part of the learning process for any author is the feedback, the further growth after you publish. What have you learned from the reaction to your new book, The End of Growth?
You know, I think I've learned that the book is still, even with all that we've seen over the past 4 years with the economy, it's still a bit on the leading edge. We put a lot of effort into getting mainstream media attention on this book, and it's been very difficult because the mainstream discussion is still very much about how we get back to growth and the idea that we're not going to get there, that growth in conventional GDP growth is just no longer available. It's still just too big a stretch for most media outlets. So it's a bit of a tough slog. And I have to say I'm surprised because the signs are everywhere that this is what's happening, that we have we've reached the limits to growth.
As we wrap up, if you met a longtime friend on the road, and I think many of our listeners count on you as a longtime friend, what is your parting advice? Is it time to leave the old economy behind? Should we leave, or should we pull harder where we are?
Well, of course, it depends on each person and where they are, but I have to say I think it's really important right now that we develop local resilience and detach ourselves from the global economy as much as we can, as fast as we can, because it's a ship that's going down. And this is controversial advice, because if everybody becomes more self-sufficient and consumes less and saves more, the result is that causes the economy to contract even further and faster. But the reality is that's what everyone needs to be doing right now, because that mainstream global economy is going nowhere.
You have been listening to Richard Heinberg. Find him at richardheinberg.com. And by all means, subscribe to his free monthly called The Muse Letter. I do. Richard, thank you so much for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Alex. Thank you so much for what you're doing.
I'm Alex Smith. Find this interview and tons of free radio downloads at ecoshock.org. And as always, thank you for listening and thank you for caring about your world. Now broadcast on 40 stations in North America by satellite, cable, podcast, and internet around the world, you are tuned to Radio EcoShock. Get a full listing at ecoshock.org. Help a friendly planet, won't you? Turn your friends on to Radio EcoShock.